morning. This is Lance Kenmore with the Kenmore team, and I'd like to welcome you to this week's edition of the Tri-Cities Real Estate Update. We're here every Saturday morning right here on News Talk 870. As always, you can contact me, Lance Kenmore, anytime direct on my cell phone at 727-8977 or visit us on the web at kenmoreteam.com. Once again, I always like to thank John for hosting and everybody here at the station for working to make this happen. John McKay, how you doing this week?
Doing well. Hey, have you had to take your fog lamps out on some of those showings?
Pretty much, especially the last couple mornings. I tell you what.
Or earlier, in the evenings.
Yes, or the evenings. We definitely, I did Badger earlier this week, kind of working on those New Year's resolutions, and it was a little foggy and dark on the trip up still in the morning. So, But like I told you, I'm going to take what we have versus what Chicago has.
Or the Midwest.
Yeah,
yes.
That they can keep negative 30 and we'll be just happy here at 30 above for sure.
Yes.
Well, we also have with us in studio, we've had him on the show before, but wanted to get him back to talk about commercial real estate. We've got Scott Howell with our commercial division with us. Scott, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. Welcome, Tri-Cities. Happy to be here. So thank you.
Absolutely. Before we jump into today's topic, we always like to start off with our crazy celebrity news story. And it was interesting because last week we had talked about the Chrysler building going up for sale. Mm-hmm. And we had briefly talked about the fact that originally a group out of Abu Dhabi had bought it for around $800 million. But the big issue was that they didn't own the dirt below the building, and there was long-term ground leases that were now doing market adjustments. Mm-hmm. And for instance, I think they had paid $4 million the year before, and the Wall Street Journal had reported that that amount was to raise up to $21 million in 2022.
That's a bit of a jump.
A little bit of a difference to the bottom line. And so it's really, really interesting. And there's some other famous, the Lotte New York Palace Hotel, for instance, sits on land, and its rent is going to reset in 2026. So you have these iconic ground lease situations that you really have to pay attention to. And a lot of people don't know, but there are parcels in the Tri-Cities that are on ground leases. Last year, ooh, for instance, in Richland, we saw the Jadwin Towers sell last year, and that was, interestingly enough, a ground lease situation.
You also have a lot of property out at Richland Airport that is actually on ground leases as well. So they built the stick frame building or the warehouse, but it is on lease property. So,
see, this is why we have the commercial guy in here to comment on these stories. But yeah, a little different when you are kind of doing an analysis of what that lease is, what it looks like long term, and when it resets.
That's very different when you don't own the ground, you own the building.
Absolutely. It's a much, much different situation on the analysis. Well, we're just going to, based upon that, we're just going to jump right into the topic today of kind of doing a commercial real estate update and to talk about some of the lingo that goes on with commercial real estate. We talk a lot about the residential side of things. But it's a very different world, and I always like to get Scott in here. Scott, for the people that might have missed you last time on the show, just some quick background. One of the things I always get excited about is just your background that led you to the success you're having in the commercial real estate world. How'd you end up here in Tri-Cities?
Oh, well, wife and I ended up moving over here from Seattle. I was doing asset-backed financing over there and then ended up joining up with a financial institution in town. They wanted to get into asset-backed financing and then transitioned that into becoming a commercial loan officer and primarily basically funding large commercial loans, whether that be owner-occupied or investment. So,
absolutely. And then I walked in one day with a deal, saw what you did quickly on the analysis and said, let's go sell some freaking commercial real estate.
So. It's a fun side of the business, that's for sure.
Absolutely. Well, Scott, one of the things that we talk about that's a little bit different is, I think a lot of times in, say, residential real estate, people kind of have an emotional attachment to property, and there's different factors that drive up the value, but what are kind of the two approaches to value that you look at on the commercial side?
Yeah, I mean, the main two approaches are obviously if you are looking at buying a building and then putting your company in there, obviously you're looking at things on a price per square foot basis versus if you are looking for an investment property, really what you're evaluating is how much income versus how much in terms of operating expenses going out. And so basically, if you're owner-occupied, you're on a price per square foot basis, that's going to be on what the surrounding properties are selling for around you. Or if you're looking for investment, you're going to be basing that on a capitalization rate, or what we like to call a cap rate in the business.
Okay, so I'll hear people kind of throw that around at times, and they'll say, like, what's the cap on that property, or what's the cap rate, and I'm looking for a 7, or I'm looking for a 6. What does that number signify for the general listening public out there that's new to that world or just has questions about that? What does that 6 or that 7, what does that number mean? What is that?
So the capitalization rate is basically derived by taking total revenue coming into a property throughout the year and then subtracting out the operating expense, basically what you're having to spend to maintain that property or pay in taxes, insurance, whatever that might be. And so then what you end up doing is you end up getting a net operating income. You get that number, which is basically your net proceeds, right? You take that net operating income and you divide that by the potential sale price of the building or what you end up taking the building out for. So if you're getting something for a 6% cap rate, you probably need to come see me and we'll get you something at 7 or 8%. So that's going to be a little bit better flowing cash property for you.
Absolutely. So just real like basic math. So if after all expenses and stuff, you had you were getting net $70,000 that you take home, and if you had $1 million building and it returned you that net 70, you'd be 7 cap rate then.
Correct. You got it, buddy.
Okay, gotcha. And so like you said, if you're only getting a 6 or a 5, come talk to me because I could show you a couple different projects where let's take that same $1 million and put it over here. And then you get a 7 cap.
Yeah, real estate's a leverage business, right? Especially commercial real estate. And so basically, if you're taking something out or a 5 or a 6% cap rate, you're going to have to contribute quite a bit of money down just based on the fact that the property doesn't cash flow. And so you might be putting 40, 50% down on a building that you're paying that basically has a 6 or a 5% cap rate. And so let's find something that cash flows a little bit better. Let's keep as much cash in your pocket as possible. And let's maybe go out and buy 2 buildings, right?
Okay, and that makes sense. And then I think a lot of times too, you know, when people come to you, they don't really know what that number is. And so I know with your, you know, banking background and what you do, a lot of times people are trying to figure out, you know, I've seen you do some really in-depth analysis where you get to that number and they say, well, look, I'm not really sure, Scott, what my building is worth, but here's my books and here's my expenses. And so what do you think we should price the building out? So you'll actually work that equation sometimes backwards for the owner that, say, been in their building for 20 years and doesn't really know where to price it.
Yeah, and what it comes down to, Lance, is the net operating income that the bank is using is a very different net operating income number than what you know, the real estate agent might be utilizing, right? And so the bank's going to go ahead and figure in like a vacancy factor in there. They're going to figure in things like a maintenance reserve. So, you know, what potential maintenance items might be coming up. You know, that could be anywhere from 3 to 5%. And so basically whatever net operating income number that the real estate agent might have provided, they're going to continue to deduct some things out of that. And so essentially when the bank's sitting there and they're doing their commercial analysis, what they want to see is a $1.25 $1.05 of income for every dollar going out. And so that's called a property debt coverage ratio. And that's very important because most banks are going to want to see 1.25 as that ratio. So again, that's $1.25 coming in for every dollar coming out.
Okay, and that totally makes sense. And that's what I love talking to Scott about these
deals. That even
deals.
Made sense to me.
Yeah, that even made sense to McKay. And I love it when people talk to Scott about these deals because one of the things that we always talk about in real estate is broadening the number of people that your property appeals to. If you want to sell your property for the most amount of money in the least amount of time with the fewest hassles, you want to put it out there to a larger audience. And when mm-hmm. you're pricing that way, you need to know, and Scott really has that knowledge of, here's what the buyers are going to be looking at with their banker. If we can't provide them the realm of possibility, they're never going to be able to get financing. If they can't get financing, now we're only looking at a cash buyer. Mm-hmm. And now maybe instead of a 40% of the market share we're advertising to, now we're only advertising to 20 or 15%. And so we can look at those deals for you, analyze that data, have Scott sit down with you and say, okay, here's where I would price at, or here's why I think your building didn't sell. And then when I come back from the break, we want to talk about what we can do to add value to your property and talk a little bit about the different types of tenant mix in commercial property.
Right here on News Talk 870.
Welcome back to the Tri-Cities Real Estate Update. We've been talking this week about commercial real estate, and we brought in a commercial real estate specialist. We've got Mr. Scott Howell in the studio with us. Scott works in our commercial division and is just crazy busy. Kind of a quick start to the year. We talked about good weather on the residential side, but man, you've been putting a lot of contracts over the desk.
It's been quite busy. So, like today, I think I'm going to be leaving here with my hair on fire. And so, hopefully, somebody at the office has a fire extinguisher.
Absolutely. No, it's really good. And Tri-Cities has just been in a market that's been growing. We're, mm-hmm. Constantly number of contacts from the West Side and Portland, even over the last 2 weeks of, here, we're looking about moving this business here, franchising this business here, mm-hmm. looking for land. And for this, for this development. So a very, very active market. Now, one of the things before the break we start kind of alluded at, Scott, is talking about the right tenant mix. I mean, you deal with buildings and a lot of times it comes down to, as an investor and you buy a property or you're a landlord, it comes down to what type of tenant mix are you looking to put in that building?
So anytime you're looking at commercial real estate, you got to think of it this way, right? And I can even break it back down to residential, right? Is it better to have a single home and one person, or do you want a fourplex where you have four sources of income? Very much the same thing in commercial real estate, where if you have a multi-tenant building, right? So you have, let's call it four suites that are generating income. If one person ends up going out of one of those suites, you still have three other sources of income. So there isn't that, there's only one tenant in the building, they end up leaving, then we have to fill the whole entire thing up again. So it provides sort of a safety net to an investment property, Lance.
Yeah, kind of a risk strategy there.
Bingo.
So, now, I will tell you, though, if like Walgreens or somebody comes knocking on my door, I have for a long-term lease, I might want to consider it.
There's also the right tenant, and that's tenant in a singular, not a plural sense of the word. But if you ever have somebody that's like a national player or a great anchor tenant is a word we like to throw out there, somebody that's anchoring that building, that's always a great thing to see. The other thing that you always want to see, too, if you're going multi-tenant, is good synergy, right? You want that synergy between the the businesses. You want to make sure that they play off of one another well. And so, you know, that's something that's very important, because that's something that a lot of people will say to me is, okay, well, I really like the building. I just don't know that I see my business being here based off of the other tenants that are in the mix.
Absolutely. So say you're, you know, say you're in an industrial, you know, transitional area, and maybe you have a window installer and a tile installer and a painter, and or you look at, you know, 20 different things, building trades, and then somebody's like not going to put like maybe a Subway there.
Or like a retail dress shop, you know.
Right, exactly.
So that's always very important, and you want to be conscious of that whenever you're basically as a landlord looking to fill a building where, okay, I mean, that might be instant income coming in from somebody, but if at the end of the day it's going to have a negative impact on the other tenants in your building, and essentially they might end up leaving because of that business mix. That's something that you got to be careful of. The other piece is making sure that you're not putting somebody in the same line of business in the building, because that can have a huge negative impact to somebody too. Right?
Yeah, absolutely.
There's a well-known pizza place on Kennewick Avenue, and right next door to them is a little kind of a mom and pop specialty food place, and there have been two or three different of those.
Yep.
The pizza place. You know where I'm talking about?
Yes, absolutely.
That's what it came to mind. You've got this huge national chain here and then a small mom and pop.
Yeah, absolutely.
But they're both food places.
Yeah, and kind of what Scott says too, maybe one tenant goes in, I mean, even if it was like convenience store related or something, and they have, you know, coffee or an espresso stand is a big portion of their business, and then next thing you know, you're opening another one two lots down, and there might just not be enough, they call it rooftops, you know, people and population in the area to support that for sure. Now, on the other hand, sometimes you have a great tenant mix where you drive traffic to each other. And I go back and think, you know, a lot of times I'll see kind of, maybe you have like an automotive row where you've got, you know, alarm or stereo installer, and I think of ones in town, and then
you've
got
an auto detailer,
and then
a parts store.
Yeah, exactly. So no, that tenant mix, I see where there are some times where you drive by and you raise your eyebrows a little bit and say, how the heck did that end up there? And a lot of times you're driving by 2 or 3 years later and it's not there anymore.
Yeah, there's a reason for that.
There's a reason for that. Well, Scott, one of the other big questions we get a lot is we get people that come to us and say, hey, look, I'm just, you know, looking at investing. I've bought, you know, three duplexes and I want to diversify my portfolio. And instead of residential on the duplex side, I want to look at buying a commercial building. Now, I think a lot of times what people aren't prepared for is what it's like to get a commercial loan for investment property. And what are some of the big things you're talking to your clients about getting those commercial loans?
Number one's always going to be money down. You know, you can get into multifamily with very, very little money down. And so in the commercial world, for investment property, you're going to need at least 20 to 25%. You know, that's a good target number. And so a lot of people aren't prepared for that. You know, the other thing is that the building needs to make sense, and it needs to cash flow. It needs to cash flow at that 1.25 to 1 ratio. If it doesn't, you know, and for my days of banking, I'm going to sit there and go, okay, if we hit a recession, what's the first thing that's going to go? What's the first thing that you're going to lapse on that payment? And it's typically going to be like boat, RV, commercial property. Not in that order necessarily, but you kind of get where that one's going.
Right, yeah. You're going to make the payments on the house you're sleeping in.
Absolutely.
And living in, and less likely on those other.
Absolutely. So, I mean, money down is key. You know, if it's their first go round, one of the things that you're kind of seeing here locally right now is there's not a ton of investment property. right? And so, you know, if the market is slim and you're getting those great capitalization rates on these properties, a lot of times you can take a property that's vacant and it might be based on a price per square foot basis.
Yep.
You can turn around, and if you have the cash to do it, because the bank's not going to finance, typically not going to finance an empty building. So you pay cash for that building. You kind of figure out what you'll be able to lease it for. And a lot of times you can actually kind of flip something after seasoning it for 1 or 2 years and having tenants in there for quite a bit more than what you paid for it on a price per square foot basis, just based off of, you know, how aggressive those investment capitalization rates are right now.
So that kind of goes back to the old adage, cash is king, and probably especially in the commercial world. So like you said, so empty building, no tenants, maybe it needs a facelift. There's some of those sitting around town. We've all seen them. And somebody that has the cash available and a little bit creative, you can buy that empty building for cash, get it remodeled, get the tenants in there. Now that you have lease income, the bank will look at a whole new group of buyers that you could flip that property to.
100%. And so you got to be careful. You got to make sure that you're really doing an in-depth market analysis on, okay, what are my improvements that I'm going to need to throw into this building? How much is that going to cost? You know, kind of really, you know, what's that market rental rate that I'm going to be needing to hit in terms of a price per square foot? And then, you know, what's that do once I throw a capitalization rate at it? And we've seen a couple of recent deals that turnaround income is six figures plus. So
yeah,
it's a good deal. You got to be careful. You got to do it right. And you got to make sure you're working with somebody that knows what they're doing.
Scott, that's great, great advice. And it definitely is a fascinating world in commercial real estate. I love seeing the deals that you put together. I love working with you on brainstorming ideas. How can we get these different businesses in? How can we make these properties work? And also at the same time, for a lot of business owners out there too that have been leasing for a long time, a lot of times at the end of that business cycle, they might end up, and maybe the business is not worth a ton, but if they've gone and made the jump to owning their building, a lot of times I've seen that the biggest asset some of these business owners end up having is not necessarily the business itself, but the building and real estate that they own when they get ready to retire. And I think there's a lot to be said for that in your world of commercial real estate.
Yeah, I mean, you really got to be careful and build your plan. Most business owners, myself included, and you as well, you know, we don't have a matching 401k where we have a corporate employer that's basically matching dollar to dollar up for 5%. And so you got to secure retirement to something. And if you own your own building, and when it's time to call it a day and hang up the spurs and retire, it's important to look at, you know, do I want to basically lease the building out and have residual income coming in, or do I just want to cash out and sell the property and ride off into the sunset? So
good information. Well, Scott, as we wrap up, we always kind of do a pick three. I normally pick out three properties that I think would work really well for people, listings that we have on the market right now that you're trying to either lease or sell. Do you have a pick three or one or two properties that people might want to take a look at, or business owners that are listening or investors might want to take a look at that you think are a hot property?
I do. I have four bite-sized deals. So for somebody that's basically looking at, you know, hey, I don't want to get into a $1.2 million building off the jump, and they want to take a look at something a little bit more bite-sized, we do have four office suites. They're condoized suites down off of Colorado in Kennewick. They range from anywhere from 1,200 square feet to 3,400 square feet, and the price range is going to be anywhere from $228,000 up to $650,000. And so, you know, with prices in that range, somebody that's wanting to diversify their portfolio from residential or multifamily to commercial, these are some great office suites to take a look at, and they're bite size.
Yeah, and so that's nice to find. I mean, generally just, you know, right across the street from like Ranch and Home, and then down there off of Colorado. So you're right in the thick of of things with what's going on, you know, on Columbia Center Boulevard and also what's going to happen at Vista Field with the development. So, yeah, I like that. Here's some deals where you can have a suite from $240,000 to a bigger suite up to $650,000. It's going to be really hard to say, put me in commercial real estate for $240,000 in the central business district.
And you mentioned earlier that small business owner, you know, this is a perfect opportunity to come in and take out an office suite, too, for your business, where you're not having to spend $500,000, $800,000 on a building, you know. If you have a small staff and you're looking to basically own versus lease, this provides a tremendous opportunity for that.
Scott, thanks for coming on the show and enlightening us in the commercial real estate world. Folks, if you're driving but have any questions or want to talk about your commercial real estate, go to kenmoreteam.com, shoot us a message. We'll get you hooked up with Scott, set up an appointment, and get together. Really, really appreciate all the referrals we've been getting and calls we've been getting from our listeners. It's been an amazing start to January, and we look forward to serving all of your real estate needs. And we will be right back here next week.
Right here on News Talk 870.